Radio Prague News.
Overall confidence in the Czech economy rises. Fewer first graders are set to enroll in school this coming year. And Hollywood actor Ben Foster will portray Czech Hussite leader Jan Žižka in a new biopic. Overall confidence in the Czech economy rose by 0.4 points to 99.1 in August, following a decline in the previous month, according to the Czech Statistical Office. Year on year, the composite confidence indicator, or economic sentiment indicator, was also higher. In month-on-month terms, however, while the confidence indicator of entrepreneurs increased by 0.8 points, the consumer confidence indicator decreased by 1.5 points. The number of first-year students in Czech primary schools is due to dip this year. In September, about 110,000 children will enter the first grade, a drop of almost 4,000 from the previous year, Ministry of Education data show. However, the number of primary school students continues to grow, as the overall population does. A former Czechoslovak prime minister will be posthumously awarded the Order of the White Lion, the highest distinction given by the Czech state, on October 28th, the 100th anniversary of Czechoslovak independence. President Miloš Zeman said he wanted to pay tribute to the politician, Antonín Švehla, who had supported farmers. He will also present the White Lion to three Czech soldiers killed by a suicide bomber in Afghanistan and to two-time Olympic champion Ester Ledecká. As of Sunday, the athletic stadium in Uherské Hradiště will bear the name of javelin thrower Dana Zatopková, who won gold and silver in the Summer Olympics of 1952 and 1960, respectively. She was European champion in 1954 and 58 and set a world record. Now 95, she was married to the late long-distance runner Emil Zatopek, who won three golds at the 1952 Games. American actor Ben Foster will portray Jan Žižka, the 15th-century Bohemian military leader, in an English-language film to be directed by Petr Jakl, who also wrote the screenplay. General Žižka was an innovative strategist who led the Czech Hussites in a series of religious wars, often beating numerically superior opponents. Jakl's biopic film will also focus on the relationship with a local heiress. Foster is perhaps best known for the X-Men franchise. The Žižka biopic will be the most expensive Czech film since Dark Blue World, about airmen who served with the RAF in World War II. And finally, the weather. Cloudy skies and scattered showers are in the forecast for most of the country on Saturday, with average daytime highs of between 17 and 21 degrees Celsius. Skies should clear somewhat on Sunday, with rain still likely in eastern Moravia. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Brian Kennedy. Coming up in today's program, a new Czech plant identification app claims to be the very best in the world. The coveted Winemaker of the Year prize goes to a white wine producer from Mikulov. And a bit later, we speak to Pavel Litvinov, organizer of a protest on Moscow's Red Square against the invasion of Czechoslovakia, held back in August 1968. All that is coming up shortly, so please do stay with us. A joint effort by two Czech universities claims to have developed the most accurate plant image recognition system in the whole world. Able to identify thousands of different kinds of plants and mushrooms, the software has already won three international competitions, beating human experts in the process. Tom McEncrow has the story.
Using a set of algorithms modelled loosely after the human brain, scientists from the cybernetics departments of the Czech Technical University in Prague and the University of West Bohemia have developed software with a classification accuracy of up to 90% in over 10,000 plant and mushroom species. The series of competitions at which the software gained its accolades was organised by the annual Computer Vision and Pattern Recognition Conference, which took place in Salt Lake City this June. In the various contests, computer systems were pinned both against each other as well as against human experts. The software has the potential to become popular in a country where mushroom picking is a regular pastime. In the summer of 2017, an app based around a similar concept, which claimed to be able to identify 210 species of mushroom with an accuracy of around 60%, became the second most downloaded application in the Czech Republic. One of the software's creators, Milan Schultz, from the Department of Cybernetics at the Czech Technical University, described the early yet promising interest around the project, which extends far beyond the borders of Central Europe.
We met already with several groups, so at a conference, for example, there is a Chinese app for recognizing plants, and then we are also in contact with other international teams, some Danish organization focused on fungi recognition, etc. And yeah, we are also discussing with more groups or more teams. I would say so far we never reached like some very specific details of cooperation because these contacts are very fresh.
Scientists rather than businessmen, Schultz and the cybernetics team are more interested in improving the software rather than developing the app.
For us, the priority is still to improve the state-of-the-art in machine learning and in computer vision. So for us, maintaining the application is not a priority, so we would prefer collaboration with someone who is interested in running such an app, and we would provide the technology and the artificial intelligence needed to do this with high precision.
Using the software's methodology, the scientists at the Czech Technical University are already working on other projects that may make our lives easier.
We use similar technologies that we try, for example, in plant recognition and apply them also for other projects. We are, for example, also working on a project for smart appliances for homes. And often we can see similarities in the methods between the different applications.
Martin Schultz ending that report by Tom McEncrow. Now, Jaroslav Valožík, a winemaker from the South Moravian town of Mikulov, has just won the title of Winemaker of the Year. Nearly 60 Bohemian and Moravian producers took part in the 16th edition of the prestigious competition, sending over 540 samples of wines. Ruth Frankova has the story.
Takže dámy a pánové, vinařem roku 2018 se stává.
The annual Winemaker of the Year title was awarded at a ceremony at Prague's Joffin Palace on Thursday night. Jaroslav Volařík, who won the top crystal globe for his collection of white wines, says it was quite a surprise for him, given last season's poor harvest.
Jsme měli problém vlastně s vinobraní 2017.
Last year's wine crop was far from ideal. Mother Nature was really playing tricks on us, so it definitely wasn't the best year to take part in a competition, and I have to say I really was taken aback by the result.
The Volařík family has been growing grapes in the Pálava Hills in South Moravia since the Second World War. They established the winery in 2007 and have since collected a number of awards, including 3 Winemaker of the Year titles. Their production focuses almost exclusively on white wines.
White wines are truly a priority for us. Most of our vineyards are located on the slopes of the Pálava Hills, and their limestone bedrock creates optimal conditions for such wines as Weiss Riesling or Veltliner.
Last year's harvest was affected by severe frosts, which occurred at the end of April. In some parts of the Czech Republic, including the biggest wine-growing region of South Moravia, temperatures plunged to as low as -6 degrees Celsius. Petr Marek, who organizes the Winemaker of the Year competition, says he feared that the poor harvest would result in fewer entries this year. But to his surprise, participation was stronger than in the previous 2 editions. Josef Valihrach, one of the members of the international jury, says that the samplers in the competition show that the Bohemian and Moravian wines are improving.
No, byl jsem spokojený, v té osmičce bývá vždycky, bývají ty vína vynikající.
I was really satisfied. There are always great wines in the top eight. I take part in other competitions around the world, including in France, and I can say that Bohemian and Moravian winemakers have nothing to be ashamed of. The quality of our wines keeps increasing. Some wine experts say that Czechs are not capable of making quality red wines, but it simply isn't true. Just look at this weather. I am sure we can produce red wines as well.
The Znovín Znojmo winery finished in second place, followed by Zámecké vinařství Bzenec. The competition also recognized the best family winery with annual production of up to 200,000 litres. This year, the prize went to Jindřich Kadrnka from Březí u Mikulova. The title Můj vinař roku, or My Winemaker of the Year, which is voted on by the public, went to the Hrabal family winery from Velké Bílovice.
Ruth Frankova reporting. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature. The Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia sparked anger and dismay around the world, including in the then Eastern Bloc, where a very small number of very courageous people made their opposition to the invasion known, often at great personal cost. Ian Willoughby spoke to one of them, Pavel Litvinov, for this edition of One on One.
On the 25th of August 1968, eight brave souls held a public protest on Moscow's Red Square against the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia. They all paid dearly for that act of fearlessness and defiance, receiving punishments including jail terms, internal exile, and forced psychiatric treatment. The demonstration was organized by Pavel Litvinov, whose grandfather Maxim Litvinov had been Stalin's foreign minister in the 1930s. This week, Mr. Litvinov, now resident in the US, was in Prague for events marking the 50th anniversary of the invasion. When we spoke, I first asked him what had led him to abandon his communist elite background and become a dissident.
After Khrushchev's speech on 20th Congress of Communist Party, I learned that Stalin, whom I admired and loved as a kid, was really criminal, and I felt that something has to be done and we have to change the system. The changes in the country were very slow, and when Khrushchev invaded Hungary, we were disappointed in Khrushchev, became very cynical. But then it became clear that life depends on us, and I became one of the founders of so-called dissident and human rights movement. I felt that I have to speak up when I know that people are arrested, put in mental hospitals, and started to speak up. And around me appeared group of people, relatively small, but behind it were maybe millions who somehow sympathized, learned about our activities through foreign radios, Radio Liberty, Voice of America, BBC. So it became a kind of mood, which became later known as dissidents.
During 1968, how did you even come to know about the Prague Spring Movement? I mean, was it much covered in the press in the Soviet Union?
It was covered very little and very distorted. But we already could read between lines, and when we said that Czech intelligentsia kind of started to sympathize with the bourgeois capitalist ideas, we knew that they actually sympathize with human rights and with free discussion. But we were listening at that time, Voice of America, BBC, Radio Liberty, and got a lot of information. Another thing was important that Czechoslovakian newspapers like Rude Prava, Literaturne Listy, and some others were sold because nobody could read them. But among my friends and future participants of demonstration was Larissa Bogoraz, Natalia Grabanevskaya, Konstantin Babitsky. All three of them were professional Slavists who knew Polish and Czech language and translated. So we started to circulate things which were happening. And I became very sympathetic to Alexander Dubček, who slowly but consistently started to improve possibility of conversation between people, freedom of information. And for us, Czechoslovakian Spring, the possibility to build socialism with human face, by Dubček expression, became something which we thought What would if it happened in our country? We were not naive, but we knew that it's a different country. But in the same time, we felt very deep connection with Czechs and Czechoslovaks and followed what happening. And at some point it became obvious that sooner or later the Soviet authorities won't tolerate that development and send troops like they already did in Hungary and in Germany before that, that it's a question of time. And among us, at least in my small circle of friends, there was a feeling that if they do it, the only thing we can do is to get to Red Square and demonstrate. Red Square is a place where people come and take their support of Soviet government, and it was a natural place to come and protest against activity of Soviet government, which we disagree. So it became kind of idea which was in air among my friends. They said, Pavel, because everybody knew me, I was at that time kind of central figures where many lines intersected. If they send troops, tell us, we'll come with you. In 1967-68, what happened in Czechoslovakia, it was like our backyard.
When you held your demonstration on Red Square on the 25th of August, 1968, what were you hoping to achieve?
We just felt that we have to speak. We didn't hope to achieve anything. We knew that the troops won't be, because of our demonstration, taken. But we wanted to say to the world and to Russia and to our Czechoslovak brothers that the Soviet authorities say that all the Soviet people support invasion of Czechoslovakia, because Czechoslovakia wants to stop building socialism and will be inviting West Germany, which means Nazis for in Soviet official language, troops there, and Soviet Union get full people support. And we said, not full people, I'm not one of them. So that was the feeling that we have to say it, and people have to know that not all Russians speak. So that was the thing which we want to do. That I feel that I'm ashamed that from my name, a big country occupied the small neighbor. Not for anything except for trying to define their own destiny.
You unfurled a banner on Red Square reading, "For our freedom and yours." What were you saying with that message?
Yeah, that message was not me invented it. It was a message which was invented by Poles in 19th century were under Russian Empire. There was a Polish revolt, and during that time, the Polish emigre met Alexander Gerzen, Russian famous writer and emigre in London, and they would drink together for your and our freedom. So the idea was that there cannot be freedom for Russia if we will deprive freedom our small neighbor. So that was the idea, that free country cannot be free by occupying another country. That's why we felt we are like brothers. We will be free together or never.
And your own freedom, I guess, very quickly came to an end when you began your protest.
Yes, it definitely did. I was beaten and brought to police station and eventually sent to exile, where I work in far east in Siberia as an electrician in mines. It was hard, and at some point I got very sick, but in the same time I expected worse. I was ready to go to labor camp behind barbed wire for 7 years, and I got just 5 years of exile, where my wife and my son could join me, and my daughter even was born there. So it was much better. So I expected worse and was prepared for worse.
But still, 5 years in Siberia, that's a big chunk out of your life. Did you ever regret what you did?
No, absolutely. I have something to remember and be proud of. And suddenly, in the last 10 years, people start to talk that it was a part of important historical events of 20th century. We didn't expect that, but I feel proud and glad that I did it.
When did you start learning that there were other people in other cities in the then Eastern Bloc who also carried out similar protests? And I guess today you must know many of these people.
I know about many protests which happened, or people planned them, and were arrested before doing. We kind of felt that there is a brotherhood of people both inside Soviet Union and in Eastern Europe who feel the same way. We couldn't necessarily be in contact all the time, but we heard about each other. Foreign radio was very important. So there was some kind of brotherhood of people who wanted freedom, and we felt each other's shoulder.
And how do you look back today on what you did 50 years ago?
Well, with pride and even feeling that we somehow contributed to fall of communism and Berlin Wall and freedom of Czechoslovakia. Unfortunately, we didn't bring freedom to Russia on the same level, although Russia today is freer, the communism doesn't exist, but what exists is a cynical government which cares about power and money only. But at least there is no some kind of distorting humanity, communist idea. It's dead, at least in Russia and in most of the world. Even those countries which call themselves communist, like China, they're not real communists. They're a special type of state capitalism, even to some degree successful. So at least that part we won. But we still need in Russia and in China, for that matter, free press, independent court, and basically independent free enterprise. All these things have to be reached. We see here today, in both in Russia and in Czech Republic, in America, some nationalist tendencies. We have Putin and Zeman and Trump who don't care about freedom, who are cynical, curse, and they would rather have quietness of cemetery instead of free, dynamic life.
You've been living in America for many years. Do you know, do many people or many young people in today's Russia know about what you did in 1968?
It's hard to say, but if you start talking, people heard about it, but they don't know exactly. But definitely, if you ask that question 20 years ago, nobody heard it, almost was not non-existent. Now, somehow, by some mysterious historical process, they know more.
Pavel Litvinov speaking to Ian Willoughby. And that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's content, please do get in touch. Our address is english@radio.cz. You can also contact us on Facebook or through Twitter. We'd be glad to hear from you. I'm Brian Kennedy. Thanks for listening, and goodbye for now.